Okay, so like I've stated earlier, my topic is secondhand smoke exposure, the prevalence, validation, and the effects. And this study is funded by the Flight Attendant Medical Research Institute, and the PI is Dr. David Lee. So a little background information, only 35% of the U.S. population is covered by a comprehensive clean indoor air legislation, and Florida, where our study takes place, has a partial clean indoor air legislation. Yet, in some of the previous studies that we've done, we found that the majority of young adults report secondhand smoke exposure in bars, in motor vehicles, and in the workplace, and these exposures were associated with respiratory symptoms. So despite this legislation, the National Health and Nutrition Examination survey data has indicated that there continues to be exposure to secondhand smoke in the U.S. adult population. So some of the aims of our study was to collaborate with the Florida Department of Health to conduct a follow-back survey of the 2010 participants of the Florida Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, and we wanted to estimate the prevalence of secondhand smoke exposure among Florida adults, validate their self-reported secondhand smoke exposures using biomarkers, and examine the associations between secondhand smoke exposures and their self-reported respiratory symptoms. So the first phase of this study was recruitment, and we received their contact information from the Florida Department of Health, and our goal was an N of 100, and the inclusionary exclusion criteria are as follows. The persons had to agree to be recontacted at the conclusion of the 2010 Florida BRFSS interview. They had to be self-identified as a non-smoker, at least 18 years of older and older, and we excluded the small percentage of Spanish speakers in the Florida BRFSS that were non-smokers and agreed to be recontacted. So once we contact persons, those that express interest in participating in our study, we send them a biospecimen kit, and we schedule an initial interview. And that kit consists of a small container for the saliva, a pair of scissors to cut their hair, and an envelope to put the hair in. Also, we send them a cover letter detailing a little bit more information about our study and two copies of the consent form that they're asked to review before we call them for the interview. Phase two, interview one, we call them at the scheduled time. We reconfirm their eligibility for the study. We have them sign the consent form and we begin the interview. The interview is a 20 to 30 minute interview. We do this using SurveyMonkey, and we ask questions about their smoking history, secondhand smoke exposure, their attitudes towards smoking, and their respiratory symptoms and conditions. At the end of the survey, this is a screenshot of the script that is read to help the participant collect the samples of saliva and hair. So we guide them through this, and then that's it for phase two. Phase three is a follow-up interview where we once again conduct the interview using SurveyMonkey. The participant sends the follow-up biological samples, and we send them a thank you letter and compensate them for their time. And the time between interview one and interview two is about 10 to 14 days. That's enough time for us to receive the samples from interview one and then send them a second kit. So this is what the breakdown of our study sample was. We attempted about exactly 497 calls, and out of those 497, 150 expressed interest in participating in our study. We interviewed 100 people, and out of those 100, 97 sent both the samples for interview one and samples for interview two. Out of the 97, 88 of them sent enough samples to be analyzed. So after looking at the data, I found some outliers and saw that we needed to do some additional exclusions. For example, if you look down at the bottom, the cutoff that Benowitz et al. Reports is that for hair nicotine, the cutoff value between non-smokers and smokers is 12 nanograms per milligram, and for saliva, it's 7 milligrams per milliliter. And so you will see that participant 34 for time one and time two is very close, if not over, those cutoffs. So I had to reevaluate, should this person be included in the study or not? Are they a smoker or not? And based on some of the answers they gave on self-report, I decided that they were actually non-smokers because this lady lives with a smoker, and when I asked her how many days, how many minutes in the last 7 days were you exposed to secondhand smoke? She said in the last 7 days for time one, I was exposed for 7 hours. And in time two, 168 hours, so 24 hours for 7 days is what she told me. And for participant 89 and 95, their saliva codeine was 100, so they were excluded. And participant 89 did not include enough hair to be analyzed. Participant 93 was kept in the study. His values were below the cutoff, and he also told me that he was constantly exposed at his job, which was a prison. So this is what our demographic variables look like. This is our study, and this is compared to self-reported non-smokers in the Florida 2010 BRFSS. Our age, median age, is 63.5, and at first we thought that was really high, but compared with the Florida 2010 with a similar population, their median is 62. We have 67% female, 63 in the Florida 2010 BRFSS. But what I'd like to point out to you is that unable to work in employment status, so that includes people that are disabled or fall into that category, our value is 16.5 versus the BRFSS, which is 7.3. Our employed was 18.8 versus Florida BRFSS, which was 30.4. So we got an older population within our 86, and we believe this is due to the fact that the younger people from the Florida 2010 BRFSS were eligible for other follow-back surveys, so they were not given to us, they were given to other follow-back surveys. So this is what our biomarker concentration looks like. You can see for hair, in time one and time two, it's fairly consistent, the median value. And for saliva as well, it's very consistent. But what I'd like to point out is that for hair, the percentage of persons at baseline that were below the level of detection is about 40 for time one and time two, versus saliva, which is 70%, which were below for time one and time two. So you can see some benefit in collecting more than one biomarker. And hair collects secondhand smoke exposure for the past 2 to 3 months versus saliva, which is just about 24 to 36 hours. These are the correlations between hair and saliva at time one and hair and saliva at time two. These are our Pearson coefficient values. You can see that the majority of we have a cluster towards the lower values and then some values higher up. And the same thing here, hair at time one, hair at time two, saliva at time one, saliva at time two, and we have strong correlations. So we did test-retest agreement using the Kappa statistic on our secondhand smoke questions. And for the questions that dealt with consistent exposure, for example, the number of smokers in your household, and exposure at work, and the car and home places that you go on a consistent basis, they had stronger Kappas versus exposure on the sidewalk or exposure in someone else's car or even another public place. They had more poor Kappa statistics because these variables were more dependent on time and location. And test-retest agreement on our respiratory questions, the strong ones were wheezing, shortness of breath, and some coughing. So we did exploratory factor analysis on our respiratory questions to see what were the latent factors, and three came up. There were asthma, coughing, and allergies. The asthma was loaded by asthma, bronchitis, COPD, and wheezing. Coughing was loaded by coughed up phlegm, coughing, dry throat, repeated sneezing. Allergies was loaded by allergies, sinusitis, and hay fever. These are our factor correlations with the biomarkers, and what we found unusual, and I double-checked this many times, was that hair nicotine correlated negatively with factor 3, which was allergies. It happened in time 1 and time 2, and time 1 was actually significant. So in a few, the next few weeks, we're going to try to figure out why this happened, but an obvious reason is that with a larger sample size, some of these correlations will get stronger, and perhaps the hair nicotine will correct itself. The factor correlations with the factor correlations with some of the secondhand smoke self-report questions were also poor, and none of them were significant. So we did a regression model using I don't know if I said it earlier, but all of the analysis was used was done using SAS version 9.2, and the regression was a stepwise backwards regression, and the outcomes were the factors. So in baseline, the model, the only variable that loaded in baseline was a composite self-report exposure, versus in follow-up, two variables loaded with the asthma factor, the composite self-report, and the saliva coating. Factor two, which was coughing, the variables that loaded in time one, home exposure in the last 7 days, in the last 3 months, and car exposure in the last 7 days, versus time two, the only variable that loaded in the model was the composite self-report exposure. Factor three, which was allergies, hair nicotine, and minutes of self-report exposure loaded, and in time two, minutes of self-report exposure, exposure at home, exposure at work, and the number of smokers in your household loaded in time two for the factor variable of factor outcome of allergies. So our study limitations, we had selection bias due to the eligibility, like I said, of younger population for the other follow-back surveys, and we had an inability, because it was a remote study, to monitor sample collection of the participants, and we suspected response bias due to test retest of the questionnaire. Participants may have expected which question would come next. And we had challenges with attrition due to the 2 to 3 week study time. So our strengths were that it was a follow-back survey of the Florida BFSS. We collected two separate biomarkers, and we also had a comprehensive secondhand smoke questionnaire. So some conclusions. We can say that collection of biomarkers remotely is feasible in a diverse adult population. The CAPR test retest reliabilities for self-report secondhand exposure were variable, and a larger sample size is needed to test the ability of biomarkers to predict respiratory effects. And there were inconsistent associations between exposure indicators and respiratory outcomes. So that was our pilot study, and we're now conducting a larger study, and we are going to get an N of 600 participants, a lot larger. And the first interview was August 2011, so we're currently in the full study now. And we refined our procedures from the pilot. The interview and the sample is only done once. We added more questions to the survey, and we included more explanation for the hair and saliva instructions. And we anticipate this will be done by January 2012. So I'd like to acknowledge Dr. David Lee, who's my advisor, Dr. Chris Earhart, who's the best statistician in the world, Manuel Ocasio, who's my supervisor, and Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Tanya Clark, who are my mentors. Thank you.